Shavua Tov, ladies and gentlemen. The series begins this evening on a topic which is unpleasant. We wish it wouldn't exist, but the reality is that it does. And I believe that we all have a measure of responsibility to do what we can to help whenever we can this very painful matter. It is known in the outside world as the Aguna crisis. It's a title which I've resisted for many years. There seems to be always a crisis. We need a new crisis. You know, we don't have a crisis. We can't go on without a crisis. And there are many crises in our world. However, recent events, I believe, have projected this issue into what we'll call a crisis mode, not merely for those who are directly involved, but if I dare say, for the entirety of our community, because of the more public role that it plays. We're not only discussing the private pain of many individuals, but if I may be so bold, the public pain of the Shechina HaKadosha, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as he sees his name being trampled, the Torah being trampled, the Halacha being trampled, all because of the inability or the unwillingness of individuals involved in broken marriages to move on with their lives in an appropriate fashion. This is the introduction to this series, which will be wide-ranging. It will focus on various approaches that have been taken to try to alleviate this crisis. And we'll ultimately discuss what everyone in this room can do about it. I brought with me a few choice pieces of paper, which I will show you as the evening goes on. But first, to explain the title. It's not like me to create these titles which are somewhat provocative. From pillar to post. We all know what the expression means in our language. He's being sent from pillar to post. He's being beat up. So post, I have in front of me. Three different people from the shul brought me an article from this week's post. Tuesday, November 5th. 2013, that's 4 days ago. I get it on my Stender, this article with a picture. I had already been sent it by email and received it by fax. So now I have three times I received this same article. By a show of hands, has anybody in this room ever seen this article or heard of it? Raise your hand. Apparently, the post part has become headlined and well-known. What's the pillar? One of the attendees guessed it more or less, right? The Rambam uses the word pillar or pillars in two different contexts. One, in the very opening Halacha Hilchos Mamrim, where he describes the role of the Beis Din HaGadol, the highest Jewish court, which of course, when we had an organized court system, was the final word. It was one centralized system. And the final word was held by the Sanhedrin, the Beis Din HaGadol of 71 members, and they are the Amudei HaHorah, the pillars of Jewish law. That is one. But perhaps even more important is another use by the same author, the Rambam, of this remarkable term in a very remarkable passage in Rambam, where he himself He has a particular view on the matter. The matter is not that important to us, although it's relevant to us, very, very relevant. When is a Shemitah year? Arcane halachic dispute. When is a Shemitah year? And he has a dispute with the Gaonim who preceded him. The Gaonim were those scholars who lived a few hundred years before the Rambam. And he says at the end of the day, I have this view, and according to my view, Shemitah is such and such a year. However, the Gaonim held differently. And when it comes down to the bottom line, he says, don't listen to me, listen to the Gaonim. Why? Because the Kabbalah and the Maaseh, this does not mean Kabbalah, it's not the esoteric. Kabbalah here means the tradition, and the Maaseh, what's commonly done, are the Amudim Gedolim, are the great pillars, Uvahem Rohi Le'itolos. We do well to lean and to rely upon these pillars. And these pillars are, of course, the primary topic of our discussion of halacha, and yes, the discussions of the pillars upon whom the halachic system rests. Going back, we can go back to the Rambam as one example, but we do not believe that a halachic system can survive if it's relying exclusively on people who are no longer alive. Our Torah is a living Torah. Every generation has its rabbinic scholars, and the halachic development is ongoing, and there is a consensus view of Kabbalah and Maaseh, and it's this consensus view which I attempt to explicate. And I'm fully aware that this view is repudiated on both sides. There were those who feel that the halachic system is not doing enough, and there are those who feel that what recognized halachists and Torah leaders are doing is too much. And so, I will just give a very brief overview of some of the broader issues that we're going to be discussing, and then start with the more recent headlines. This crisis is not new. It's been called a crisis for decades. And it's obviously become exponentially greater with the unfortunate increase in divorce in the halachic community. Many of us are old enough to remember the 50s, the 1950s, you know, the decade of father knows best and family values, when divorces were not so common, especially within the Torah community. It's hard to measure these things. I always give a benchmark. You know what years you forget. But I know my family moved to Queens, and we belonged to Rabbi Schoenfeld Shul. We moved in 1958. So I know exactly the year. At that point in time, the shul was filled, 400 members, big, big shul. And there was a whisper that in the front row, there's someone who's divorced. It was considered at that point in time to be such an unusual... Can others confirm my experience? Am I right or wrong? Right?
Right.
That's how it was then. It's hard to explain, and it's not really our particular role to explain why things have changed so dramatically from 1958 to 2013. Not... do the arithmetic and how many years it is, but it's a lot of years, but it's still not centuries. So of course, if the Aguna problem existed in X percent of marriage that broke up and continues to exist in the same X percent of marriages that break up, it's still an exponential rise in the problem because of the numerator is greater. There's just not many more cases. It's possible, and I cannot provide hard data over here, it's more than that, that even within the numbers that exist, a greater percentage of them are prone to this crisis. That I cannot say that for a fact. But in any event, as the divorce rate continued to rise, 50s, 60s, 70s, into the 80s, this became a very serious problem. And many attempts were made to somehow try to at least alleviate the problem. One, which we will not discuss at length tonight, just to mention, are various prenuptial agreements. Started at least 30 years ago. The Rabbinical Council of America was involved in a particular attempt. Other very well-meaning rabbis have weighed in with different formulations and suggestions over the last 30 years. And in case someone's getting married this week, or next, before next year, I don't want to go without signing this, I brought a copy with me today of what's called a binding arbitration agreement, which is meant prenuptially. It's called that for various technical reasons. We have an attorney here in the room who was significantly involved in the precise legalistic formulation of the agreement over 20 years ago. It's more or less the same, been tweaked a little bit since then. As a rabbi, I was also a little bit involved in this issue. I guess maybe more than a little bit. But as it stands now, it's something which anyone getting married should sign. I recommend it to every couple that I serve as Masada Kedushin for. Almost all of them sign it. There's just a website here. You can get it at www.bethdin.org or www.theprenup.org. This is the one which I favor. There are others. I want to speak anecdotally because sometimes that's the most powerful. You think these things are in a vacuum. I brought with me, this is exhibit A, this is exhibit B. I brought with me a piece of paper dated November 7th. That's even more recent than the Post. It has my signature. It's for my signature. It wasn't signed because of certain emendations. And it's signed by myself and two other Dayanim. I'm not going to give it details because it's an ongoing case. And it's the determination of the undersigned Bezdin of America panel with respect to the request of Ms. X for regret from Mr. X. And just to give an example, the couple's been separated for over 2 years. Family court proceedings. Ta-da. The lady represents that the marriage is functionally over. No reconciliation. The man says, no. Once the proceedings conclude in the court, he'll be able to convince Ms. X to reconcile. We sat for over an hour this week with these two people. Based on all the particulars of the case presented, the undersigned Bezdin panel finds as follows. Mr. X should give a get to Ms. X as soon as practical, no later than November 25th, 2013. If he does not give a get by that date, he may be subject to the distancing measures known as Harchakot Derabbeinu Tam. Parentheses. As may be set forth in greater detail by the General Office of the Bezdin of America as applicable. You can look on their website to tell what it is. Who is this Rabbeinu Tam? What is Harchakot? What's it all about? Now, as you probably are aware, the Rambam, Maimonides, is considered one of the most important of all halakhic decisors of all time. This does not mean in any which way that all of his rulings are accepted by the community. Certainly not by the Ashkenazi community, and very often not even by the Sephardi community. One such situation is a rather far-reaching ruling of Maimonides of the Rambam. If a woman claims with respect to her husband, I use the words that are used by the Talmud, and paraphrased by the Rambam. It's called Ma'us Olai. This man is, I'll use the word, disgusting to me. I can't stay with him anymore. The Rambam maintains that in such a situation, the man is obligated to provide his wife with a get. And the assumption is, but I'll go into all these details, this may be one of the cases in which we apply that ruling which has made major headlines, not this week, but a number of weeks ago. Headlines like Prod Father, and I don't want to say very embarrassing headlines that some of the newspapers that come up with, they're much more talented than my Pillar to Post. They get paid for these things. But a man can be forced at a time when the Beis Din has autonomy to issue a get to his wife. Now, I want to just make one comment about that before we go any further, because you're probably thinking, this doesn't make any sense. How is that possible? This Rambam is remarkable in and of itself. I mean, as a Musar Rambam, nothing to do with Halacha, but Musar is part of Halacha, really. The Rambam tells us that, as the Torah implies, a man must divorce his wife willingly. As a matter of fact, the halachists derive from earlier sources in Rambam that the level of agreement, of consent, required for a get is even higher than that which is required for other areas, such as selling something, even marrying someone. So it's a very unique and high level. So the Rambam writes in the second parak of Gerushin, Halacha Chaf, in certain cases, Bezin shall Yisrael b'chol mokul b'chol zman, any time and any place, makinoso, they hit him, ad sheyomer rotzani, until he says, uncle, yes, I want to write the get, v'yichtov get will get kosh. Yes, the Rambam, it's crazy, he is an anus, he's giving it under duress, he's not giving it willingly. Why is it get kosher? This bothered the Rambam. Listen to his answer. Who's under duress? Who's an anus? Misha nilchat v'nidchak, someone who's pressured and forced. Lasos dover she'eino mechuyiv min ha'Torah lasos. He's forced to do something which the Torah does not require him to do. He's not obligated by Torah law to do so. Someone hits him till he sells something or gives away a present. But, and here's the amazing word, Mi shetekofo yitzro hara, someone that the Yetzer Hara attacked him, levatel mitzvah, not to perform a mitzvah which he's required to do, vuhuka, and he was hit, ache osa dava shechayav lasoso, till he did what he's required to do, ein ze onus bimenu. No. Elohu onas atzmo bedata hara. He forced himself, because of his Yetzirah, whatever it may be, we'll give a few examples soon, not to do what he's supposed to do. And therefore, this guy doesn't want to give a get. But he wants to be Mi Yisrael. Rotzehu lasos kol ha-mitzvahs. He wants to do all the mitzvahs. V'yitzrohu shetekofo. What's preventing him from doing the right thing? Do the right thing. That's the right thing. You're obligated to do it by Jewish law. What's preventing you from doing it? The Yetzer Hara. What does the whipping do? Toshash Yitzro. The whipping weakens his Yetzer Hara. He says, Rotani, for Giresh Liritzono. So he really is giving the get willingly. What does that mean? So Rav Meir Simcha of Dvinsk and Zohar Samech has the following, I'll just use my words. So look, externally he says, yes, I want to give the get. Go down a level, he doesn't want it at all. Go down another level, and he does want it. Go into his neshama, he really does want it. But what can you do? The Yetzer is beating up on the neshama. So it's like a sandwich. On the outside level, he says, Rotzani. On the deep, deep inside level, he wants to do the right thing. In the middle, fill in the blank, greed, spite, anger, whatever is the Yetzer, the many Yetzers in this world, intervene. Since outwardly he wants it and inwardly he wants it, the get is considered a valid get. However, if the halacha does not indicate that he can force him to divorce, and Bez makes a mistake, and they force him, the get is a get puzzle. Get puzzle. Now, there's different terms of art over here. The get puzzle means by Torah law it's good, and by rabbinic law it's not good. If the forcing was done by a Bezin that made a mistake, the impression conveyed by Torah law it's good, rabbinically it's not. If it's done by outsiders, non-Jews, they force them to give a get, ain't no get, that's nothing. That's not even a get by Torah law. It's all in one halacha, Rambam, Perek Beis, halacha Chof. Okay.
In what aspect is the question supposedly wrong?
They view this as a case that the halacha says we have a right to force them to give a get, and they're wrong. In this case, the halacha does not force them to give a get. Why are they wrong? They can either be wrong on their facts, or they can be wrong on their halacha.
Can she get remarried in that case?
Oh, no. No, the get is not a valid get. No.
Apostle get, too.
Apostle get, no good.
How does she know?
Again, if she doesn't ask, she doesn't ask. That's a general problem. She does what she does, and then we'll have to pick up the pieces later on. What the status of the children of a second marriage will be very complex in this kind of a case. Okay. But that's the background. So the whole story that broke up out into the headlines a few weeks ago has a very strong basis in the Rambam, assuming that, number one, the Bezin that was involved gave a correct psak, and number two, that they have a right to act on such a psak in the United States of America at the present time. I'd like to show you, since we're giving you various exhibits, a very nice article written by a rabbi from Muncie, New York, Rabbi Usher Bush, entitled The Tears of the Oppressed. It came out last month on something called Torah Musings. That's a certain, I think it's called a blog. And I got a copy from someone from the shul, as well as from the author. So they have two copies of this. And he writes very clearly, there were rare occasions where rabbinic courts ordered the get to be executed, had the legal power to ensure that it was done. That power was only exercised in times and places where the Jewish community had autonomy and was authorized by the secular authorities to enforce the rulings of its own courts. This was not vigilante action, but enforcement through the power of the law. On rare occasions, this is also seen today in the state of Israel, where rabbinic courts are connected to the state court system and they imprison a man who refuses to issue a get for ignoring a court order. This is a regulated legal procedure. It must be unambiguously stated that if there is a place for any sort of coercion, it is only when it is consonant with both halacha and the laws of the country and state. Okay, this is his position, which I endorse. I'm going on the record saying so. We are not in favor of these vigilante actions, even if they're done, we use the expression, l'shem shamayim, purely for the sake of heaven. I was once in the Beis Din Yerushalayim, and they asked about a certain rabbi, did he serve l'shem shamayim? He was serving for free. Or was he serving l'shem sachar, for the purpose of making money? Right. One of the rabbis said, orich ama b'yimino b'smola osha v'kavod. It's the dot on the right or the dot on the left. Unfortunately, what makes this thing even more painful, this whole expose in the papers now with the FBI sting operation, is the, again, I don't know what I mean, the papers is accurate, but certainly the impression that's conveyed by these articles that there's a lot of money changing hands over here. And that already adds we'll call it the smell factor. You know? It's an open secret that in certain Hasidic places, when this happens, they presumably have a rabbinic court, and whatever they do, but there's no money exchange, to the best of my knowledge. It's just they're doing it l'shem shamayim. Whether they're right or wrong depends on their attitude towards government, which is different than mine, and the Torah scholarship and competency of the Batei Din. But what happened here is unfortunately leads to a very, very bad situation on many levels. I have to say, before I go further, on hearing reports of individuals taking the law into their own hands in this regard, the greatest rabbinic leaders of our generations, including the late Rabbi Yosef Shalom Eliashiv, condemned such rogue practices. It's a well-known fact in the rabbinic world that the particular individual who was part of this FBI sting, that his actions were condemned by Rabbi Yosef years ago. Whatever his intentions were for to do the right thing or for money, I'm not here to judge people. But Rabbi Yosef felt that there was insufficient basis in many cases which came to him afterwards to invoke this Rambam. Doesn't apply. You have to be a major, major rabbi to apply these principles. Not just any three people called themselves a Bezdin. He was very upset, and look what happened now. It's worse than we even thought. Okay? So this is... So now, there is a concept. It's going a little bit around. I'm trying to get every one of my pieces of paper to be, at least be touched before the shiur is over. There is a concept of what's known as mois alai, as I said before, which means the man is disgusting to me. And the question is, how do we result? How do we act? What is the bottom line of all these things? What do you do with it? So the Rambam, as I mentioned to you before, said that in such a situation, it's included in the category of individuals that you may, in fact, apply this ruling of kofin. No one else but the Rambam among the early authorities accepted it. Even Maran Bet Yosef of Yosef Karo, who was very partial to the Rambam's ruling, this is Sephardic tradition, rules explicitly against, and he quotes, among other great people, Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam, of course, was a great Ashkenazi scholar, grandson of Rashi, and he said, no, if a woman says, Moi Solai, you may not compel the man by force to divorce his wife. Is there anything that you can do about it? Yes. That became known as Harchokos de Rabbeinu Tam, named after the author. You may be marchikim. What does it mean, mark? What does rachok mean? Distance. You may distance him. Now, the particulars and the details, how you distance someone who is not complying with the directive to divorce a woman who has a plausible claim. Someone says, I'm implausible. A plausible claim of moyas alai, and the word that's used by the poskim is amaslam bevureres. It's clear evidence from the circumstances that she's not making it up out of nowhere just in order to get a get. If he doesn't give the get, then these harachokos, distancing, can be directed. This means you're not going to be so close to this fellow. How do you define this? Not to be so close to him. Well, you don't have to do business with him. Don't have to, allow him to come to shul. You don't have to invite him to your house. And you fill in many, many blanks. We assume, and here's where I'm getting to my Amudim Gedolim, we assume that one may even, in many cases, again, the different situations, say, you're not fulfilling your obligation to your wife, and therefore you are, as the expression is cited from the poskim, an avarion. That's what it says in the Rishonim. Muto lekroso avarion. You can call him a sinner. You're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. You may ask, that's called compulsion. You forced him in a case where compulsion is not allowed. The Gemara says that kfiya bidvorim, how do we say we grew up? Sticks and stones can break my bones, but names can never harm me. Right? Calling him an avarian does not rise to the level of forcing him to give the get. Okay, so I'm an avarian. I'm not going to give a get just because you call me an avarian. Names can never harm me. So therefore, if we said this to him, and he gave the get because he doesn't want to be called this, he's giving it of his own volition. That's a simple interpretation, There are others, but that's a simple interpretation of this halacha. That's called Harchokos de Rabbeinu Tam. So this fellow, go back to our case of we started 2 days ago, we said 2 years of separation, we have enough evidence that she's not, there was physical violence, they're not going into details, don't matter right now. We have agreed as a tribunal of three that he's required to give his wife a get in this case, and we're not going to chas v'shalom hit him, no way, not a chance, but at the same time, maybe subjected to these distancings. Yes, Eddie?
Let's say a wife misbehaves in a way that her husband is not supposed to live with her anymore.
Okay.
Can the Bezdin force him, if he doesn't want to give a get, can the Bezdin force him?
That's an excellent question. We're going to, for the moment, you say we talk about the Aguna crisis. I've often resisted both the title and the prevalence of the crisis because it's not always so easy to define an Aguna. The most strict constructionist definition of Aguna is a woman comes, what we'll call in our language, with clean hands. She has not done anything sinful. Her conduct with respect to the breakup of the marriage in terms of going to Bezdin, etc., because we're not supposed to go to secular court in general, except for orders of protection and things of this nature, we have to go to secular court, is compatible with halacha, etc. Not going into those details now. That's an aguna. The woman you're describing, that's another word for her. Called a sota, not called an aguna. Now, can you be a sota and aguna at the same time? Not for tonight's shiur. We can't confuse those issues so quickly. Yes, sir.
The issue about that the husband is disgusting to the woman, does that require a level of active action on his part, or could she just say he looks like a slob and dresses like a slob and passively? You know what I mean? I don't mean it as a joke. I mean,
I know it's not a joke. It's not a joke at all.
Sorry.
It's absolutely not a joke. We have to all. Be a little more spiffy, gentlemen. Again, the word that's used is amaslam bevureris. The fact that the husband is not as good looking now as he was under the chuppah, whether it be his physical characteristics or his clothing or whatever else, his size, whatever the case may be, this is not ordinarily grounds for.
Meaning he has to actively do something.
Muslim of Ureris, because likely she's not as beautiful and the same size and the same everything as she was under the chuppah either. That's the way it is in life, you know? So that itself cannot be.
No, but he's got to actively do something that.
I don't want to go into details. Usually, to be disgusting enough that in a Muslim of Ureris, it means something. He hit her, okay. He's cruel to her. Sadistic. I don't want to go on.
Okay.
Obviously, the cases vary. Yes, sir.
So, this is a case, you said the husband may have beaten the wife, and she says to the Bezdin, he's disgusting to her, meaning that she never wants to be with him.
Right.
He's still maintaining in the testimony to the Bezdin right on that day.
Right.
That he thinks he can convince her that she's wrong and they can get together. So there's clearly a mindset of the two individuals that are very, very different. So, how calibrated, or what is the range of possibilities the Bezdin has available to it? You described one option.
Right.
Were there other options for the Bezdin?
Oh, for sure. We could have said, go to marriage counseling. Many, but they didn't say that. We are very loath to ever say that. By the time they come to Bezdin, and again, I'm speaking from much experience, it's usually the man who wants to get the woman and the man is resistant, but there are cases in the other way around too. 2 years have passed. We found in our experience the actuarial chances of reconciliation after 2 years separation is as close to nil as you can imagine. So what's going on? That was not an option for us. To quote beat him up is not an option for two reasons. Halakhically it's not, and governmentally it's not. So this was really basically the only option we really had, practically speaking, which was what we did. Okay, so I just want to try to answer your question as best I can. Yes, Mom?
Sort of a twofold. most of what Rabbi Lohi was saying was that the Beis Din and the Rabbanim and Halacha says. So a problem that I have here, who are we to listen to say that this person should get a get? For example, you said three people together can put together a Beis Din. So can that be challenged?
Okay, very good question. Excellent, an excellent question. You added an excellent question.
And then second question.
Second question, okay.
Is there any reason that anyone can think of why a man should not give a get after 1 year? Can't there be a time limit put on that so that it doesn't extend years and years of punishment? Maybe it can be put in a prenup. I don't understand.
Excellent. That's another excellent question. So in this particular case that we're describing, there was a prenup, which was signed by the parties. However, it was not the full prenup that I just had you exhibit B. It was a very, very truncated version thereof. All it said was, if the parties break up, they have to go to the Bezin of America to resolve their issues about a get and about whatever it is, but there was nothing more than that. This was a binding arbitration agreement to come to us, so therefore they bound themselves before they got married to our decision. So this enabled us to do what we did. There have been many cases where they signed no prenup whatsoever, zero. And often, again, typically the man says, you have no authority over me. Who are you? And he's right. We have no authority. However, since we believe in the Bezdin system, individuals should be called to a Bezdin. In the community that many of us are part of, the Bezdin of America, thankfully, over the last quite a number of years, has established itself as a legitimate, fair-minded, and most important, honest Bezdin. To my knowledge, again, they're always sore losers, but to my knowledge, that reputation, thank God, is intact, notwithstanding many losers over the last, since I was involved, the last 15 or so years, including many sore losers. But thank God. There have been many cases where the person doesn't want to go to any Bezdin, and he says, I don't have to give a get. And he's convinced to come to our Bezdin without even signing a binding arbitration agreement. But he just agrees to come with a letter from the Bezdin to both parties. Well, the credit goes to Rabbi Yonah Reis, who was the director of a Bezdin for many years. He coined the phrase, a get timing hearing. He says, I don't want to give the get now. She says, I want to get it right now. Yes or no? Yes or no? Yes or no? So very often a person, you know, maybe his lawyer tells him, don't sign any binding arbitration agreements. But for this, no, you don't have to sign anything. He comes. You'll say, so what good is it? What good is it that he comes? We'll tell him to give a get, and he won't listen because there's no teeth. The answer is that once a piece of paper exists, signed by three members of a Bezdin that is reputable, saying he's required to give the get right away, this can empower individuals and organizations to do things which they couldn't do before. I'll give one example. It was an individual, a very wealthy man, had a major company somewhere in Manhattan. I thank God I forget names and companies. I don't remember anymore. I'm not tired. I just don't remember anymore. A number of years ago, and he wasn't give his wife a get, but he agreed to this come, and because what convinced him to come in the first place? There's an organization called ORA. ORA is the Organization for the Resolution of Agunos. And they picketed his office somewhere in Manhattan. And he felt very aggrieved. And he said, what is this? What? So he was convinced, go to a Bezdin and present your case. And if the Bezdin will hear your case and they'll agree with you, that you don't have to give the get, then that's it. He came to the Bezdin and we heard the case. Also, they were separated for a long time. And he said, please, no more picketing. That was his Achilles heels. He didn't really want to be picketed in front of his business. We ruled that he has to give a get, something along these lines. he saw right away the handbag on the wall, that now he's going to be more picketing because now it's with the Bezin's ruling, he gave the get. Kacha. You know, everyone has his own story. I'm just telling a few anecdotal stories. It's also a little bit of a current case, a little bit, just to show how tricky things get. I'm not going to give out any names. It was a case of two individuals from a particular Hasidic group. And for 10 years, not 1 year, not 2 years, 10 years, they're separated. Nothing's happened. 10 years. Nothing's happening. Finally, they agreed to a Bezin under the aegis, I will call it, of the Bezin of America. I was asked to sit on it, even though the other two judges were from different parts of the world and have no direct connection to our Bezin. They agreed to do it under our rules. Our rules means there's a tape recorder going. Our rules means no ex parte communication. Well, we have a lot of rules that not every Bezin follows. And they agreed. And as a result, without going into any details, the get was given. Certain monetary issues were resolved by the Bezdin. Mm-hmm. The problem sometimes is that an individual, sometimes of the female variety, after receiving a get, says, oh, now I want another bite at the apple. Now I want to go back to secular courts and get things which I did not succeed in getting in the Bezdin.
Whoa.
So, let me give you full disclosure. One of the judges said, wait a minute, this calls into question the what? The validity of the get. I said, whoa, I said, calm down. Calm down. We don't like to cast aspersions on any get once it's given. But there is something in the rabbinic literature to support his position. But the fact that there's something in rabbinical literature to support a position, does that mean that it's the bottom line? There may have been great men who felt that way in certain cases. One of them was, for example, the Maram of Lublin. Great. Everyone knows about him at the back of the Gemara, the Maram. It was a celebrated case, which we will discuss not today, where he said something along those lines, and others he was disagreed with by the majority of the decisors of his time. In the 16th century. Oh. Now. Yes?
All of this, I think, begs the question. We're tortured with how we resolve it. But we believe we're kind of Dachinon. The Torah is present. The rabbis are really present. The main thing is that the rabbis turn the world around so that our women's children will be able to be supported, where there will be grandchildren. There are many, many complicated versions of this. Why have we gotten ourselves, Orthodox people, into this bind with an unorthodox people saying, you people have a problem with your law, with your Torah? You know, because they're smart enough to know there's a problem, and we're wrestling with a problem. Like if Mashiach came tomorrow, someone would say to Mashiach, oh, you're loving. Why did you put the woman in this position where the man has, in fact, the man has control over her? And the guy can be the worst guy in the world, and why can't.
To quote a recent.
I quote.
On my last mission to ask for a get a month ago, the husband said, I can't give you a get. How else would I control you?
Uh-huh. So how do we allow this?
Okay. Your question is a very, very pointed question. I'll do the best I can. We don't question the God-given Torah, for sure not. And we also have great respect for the rabbinic law as it is formulated and developed. When Hashem gave the Torah, the prerogative of marriage and divorce is that of the man. Clearly, the woman has to agree to the marriage, need not agree to the divorce by Torah law, by Rabbeinu Gershom, she must agree to the divorce. And there are women who play tough and don't agree to the divorce. And that causes what they call hetamei rabbanim, which is not for tonight at all, another major problem. So let me just play devil's advocate, Danny, to you. You're saying it's a terrible situation. Here it is, a man wants to control his wife, and he's not going to divorce her, even when the halakha tells him he should, and we can't do anything about it, etc., etc. Okay? So, if you want to second guess the halakhic system, the other way to go is that a woman can become divorced on her own. That's the only other alternative. Either she can or she can't. Which would mean that a woman can walk out of any marriage whenever she pleases. You know, they also want abortion on demand, they want divorce on demand, etc.
Now, no, she would have the same rights as a man. She would be able to initiate a divorce, but the husband would have to agree to it.
Well, if he doesn't agree to it.
We're back at the same thing. Danny wants that she'd be able to get remarried without the husband's agreement. I mean, you have to give a divorce on demand. That's the only. Either yes or no. I mean, that's
there
a lot.
Be,
it's binary here. Yes or no.
The rabbis are smart enough. There should be some halachic mechanism where, at a certain point, whether you like it or not, the get works.
Exactly.
If the person says it works, it works.
Right.
We don't need you to give it. So that's what's missing over here.
You better believe it's missing. It's absolutely missing. Because the Torah viewed marriage as it did. Now, yeah, I'm sorry, Eddie.
I think, you know, like, Dan's point is something that I thought of, but I hesitated to mention tonight.
You can mention it. Please feel free.
It's a free... As long as somebody else brought it up. I mean, this is what's on people's minds. In my opinion, that when the Torah was given, it didn't put the details of marriage and divorce directly into the Torah. It said when a man writes a divorce to a woman, it says when a man marries a woman, etc. All the details are somehow either halacha Moshe Sinai or Misora or whatever they were formulated. But it seemed that a lot of the power of regulating these laws were given to the Rabbanim. And they worked in those societies very well. In fact, we were ahead of the curve for most of history because we had things like the Ksuba, which was much more advanced than other people. Today, though, we have a problem in that women, first of all, could go into the workforce and earn a living and don't need their husbands anymore. Women are not stuck. You know, so many things have changed in terms of the relationship. You know, the differences between men and women, that this was kind of like left out, and we don't seem to have the power to change it, although it should be.
I hear what you're saying. It's a very well-formulated comment.
There were times that Rabbi Gershon made takanos. So right. All through the centuries, there have been rabbanim who made takanos to try to help.
Right.
After World War II,
right.
The rabbanim did.
Correct. I have the power. thank you very much for empowering me. Sure, then.
I've always been astounded with the following two gemaras. We make very short. In one gemara, a man gives money to a person and says, "I give it to you in trust, and after you die, he goes to so-and-so." The gemara says, if he wants to be a Rosh Arum, he gives it to somebody else. He basically defeated the intent of the set law. He defeated the intent of the woman who gave it. He did a terrible thing. But then the Gemara says, the man says to the woman, "I'll give you a get, a manas, you give me $100. The Gemara says, "Yes, no, bye-bye." The Gemara never says, "What a Russia. He's giving his wife a get, a manas, on the condition he can pay $100. He's a Russia. The Gemara never even sees the man as being a Russia when he gives a get on a Tanai. But the Gemara sees a man being a Russia if he gives money to somebody, he defeats the guy's intent.
Okay.
So why
we will discuss that.
About
we will, that is a very good question, but again, not for now. I'm trying to get to all my pieces of paper here. Okay. I have this. This is put on my shtender anonymously. Ladies and gentlemen, anonymous screeds are always dangerous. I have a piece of paper. It's in Hebrew. And in English, it's a Hebrew date over here of Tovshin Ayin Gimel in the month of Tammuz, signed by many great rabbis, and they're complaining about certain individuals who are forcing Gittin, which is wrong. However, they include in the what they consider the unacceptable means to try to achieve that the get to be given, asiyas bizyonos shelo apidin Torah. Bizyonos, everyone knows what bizyonos means. What's bizyonos? Insult, you know. Now, I've learned from my experience that rabbis whose names are signed on various documents often never saw the document. They were told, I have trouble believing that some of the names signed over here looked at that and put their name to it. Because although everything has a source, there is a one line in a Chuvas HaRashba where it says that in certain these kinds of cases of Moyes Olai, where we follow the Rabbi Natan, and he says three things. He says, Linadoso, to excommunicate, that's no good. You'll ask, what's wrong with excommunicate? I didn't do anything. No. Excommunication is a halachic construct. Excommunication is something which, now it's, we don't really do it anymore. But in the olden days, it was like killing someone. You just, it was shamisa, like you're killing him. So, can't do that, okay? You can't, with saro begufo, you can't cause him physical pain. And in the middle, not lenadoso, lo yenadu also, for lo yivazu also, for lo yitzaro also begufo. So a line in the Chumash of the Rashba exists. What it means is unclear, because one could suggest, this is my reading if you want to get out of it, that read it as follows. You can't put him in excommunicating. Nor may you, all one run on. Lo yivazu also, v'lo yitzar also begufo. Which means you may not cause him physical shame, nor physical pain. What's physical shame? Spit on him. I don't know, all kinds of different things which are not painful, but are as opposed to, because the same line says, you're allowed to be ma'ayim olav v'dvarim. Not threaten him with words. So you have to strike a balance, even in that particular one-line source. If you're allowed to threaten him with words, you're not allowed to cause him shame. It's almost contradictory. A. B. It's not clear that the halachic corpus has accepted that one line in some far-off tshuva, which is not found in the Shulchan Aruch, that it's accepted. Rav Yosef Kar quotes in Beis Yosef, it's true. Why do I say that? Because now I come to stand up for the honor of Rabbonim, whom I respect, who are being character assassinated by a certain individual whose screed I found on my stand. I don't know who put it here. I have a guess, but I won't give you my guess. I found it on my standard sometime, Cheshvan 5774. We're only a week into Kislev. Criticizing four of the greatest rabbis of our time and place. And he gives you the names. I'm not giving any secrets. Rabbis Kotler, Kamenetsky, Wachtfogel, and Perlow have issued letters demanding that one humiliate the husband . This rabbi entitles his piece The Rosh Yeshiva Mamzer Factory. He says, if you embarrass this fellow and he gives a get, the get is invalid. The woman will remarry, have children, they'll be mamzer. That's what we call the height of irresponsibility. Character assassination of four very distinguished rabbis. You don't have to agree with everything that they say in order to defend their honor and oppose such a headline, Rosh Yeshiva Mamzer Factory. And here I go back Some say that we're not doing enough, and I sympathize with that very, very much. But as we see over here, some say, and I'm not putting them in the same category, that we're doing too much. Too much. As a matter of fact, aside from these four rabbis, another very distinguished Rav has been savaged by the same rabbi as being much too quick to pull the trigger for the Ora organization to embarrass people and to make pickets, etc., etc. And yes, there are a number of difficult cases that Ora deals with. Some of my Talmidim are very much involved. One of the cases, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, still going on, involves an individual who was working for someone in Congress. It's a whole tumult. It's all that's been written up in the New York Times. I'm not giving any secrets. So now, I have another piece, and I know my time is running out. This is from Ma'ariv. Again, nothing knows this. This is about a man named Rabbi Shlomo Riskin, who is interviewed by Ma'ariv. And he says, we have to go back to the Rambam and follow the Rambam in practice, and anyone who doesn't want to give a get to his wife, and it's what we call Moyes Olai, go back to the Rambam, and he should be forced by any means, I assume he only means legal means, any means to give that get.
Israel could pass a law like that.
In Israel, there are limited cases. There are limited cases in which a Mevadi Yosef has made reference to that opinion of the Rambam, notwithstanding the fact that he is a loyalist, a Maran Bet Yosef to the extreme, and Maran Bet Yosef says no. He has mentioned this opinion in one of many, many considerations in certain limited cases, but not as a panacea, for sure not. Now my final point for today, two final points. Aside from Rabbi Riskin, who was saying what he's saying, and this is all public record, a few weeks ago I received again, someone emailed it to me, a proposal by a different rabbi, because that's not so well known, I'm not interested in dropping names, in which he took a theoretical proposition by a particular Rav, which is printed in a particular article. If you want to look it up, I'll just give you one word to try to find it. It's called a tripartite proposal with three different devices, all of which are very questionable by the author's own admission. You put all three together, maybe you will rise to the level that based on the combination of the three factors, a get can be given. I'm not going into the details right now. The rabbi himself, to his credit, said, no way anyone should follow this unless it gets the agreement of some of the great people he mentioned, Rabbi Avad Yosef. That obviously cannot happen anymore. And the other such greats, which never was forthcoming. This fellow writes, we have to do it. And he goes as far as to say, not only do we have to do it and advocate the signing of this particular document, but even if it's not signed, we can assume that it's as if it was signed. That's really bold. And I'm sure the man means well. What pains him is he wants to make a solution to the Aguna problem. That's a solution. Unfortunately, it's not a valid halachic solution and a halachically valid solution, and it's caused great pain that if people will do this, at the end of the day, if the solution is not advocated by a sufficient number of amudim, pillars, not posts, pillars, it's not going to fly. The prenup that I was involved in, and still am, has enough pillars. We wouldn't put it into operation until we had five pillars. We had Rabbi Avadi Yosef, we had Rabbi Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, who's a great rabbi, a symbolist, who Rav Yosh considered to be the best dayan in the country, in a particular case in B'nai Brak, he put him into, not for now. And we had in Rabbi Schwartz, Shlita and Rabbi Libus of blessed memory. Rabbi Libus was known as a very great rabbi, first in the Bronx, first in Europe, then in the Bronx, and then in Barapa. Great.
He didn't have it.
We can discuss that as we go. More recently, a very beautiful letter was given an endorsement by Rabbi Usher Weiss, who's spoken at this very platform, and many of you are familiar with his Torah and his status. They're pillars. Will others disagree? Absolutely. Will other responsible rabbis say that this prenup will lead to a marriage, to a divorce, that they will post facto disqualify? Don't think so. It would be very hard to imagine. I have to mention two more things before I end. We'll have to continue mission in 2 weeks from now. One is, there are legal steps that have been taken. There are two get laws in New York State, which were passed. The first one is good, and the second one is likely no good. Can't go in, I'm just giving you headlines. And Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who was known as a very great man who loved to help people, he was not the... said about it, it is, quote, sakana velo takana. It's a danger and not making things better. My final thing is, I have something which was given to me by a psychiatrist in the community, not sitting here in the audience right now. And it's, I thought you might be interested in this. Treating the borderline personality disorder patient, from CNS News. What is CNS? March 2006. Practical Psychiatry. Okay? An article by a psychiatrist. I'm just going to end with this story. If people think that the rabbis aren't trying hard, I'll end with this story. At least two people in the room know some of the parts of the story. A case, someone, I think it was in France, I forget details all the time. He wouldn't give a get, won't come to Bez, and disappeared. It's a disaster. We try to apply a principle which, generally speaking, we feel has been misapplied. And that is Kiddush Etos. The marriage was under a false pretense. Had the woman known about this, she never, ever, ever would have married this guy. And Kiddush Etos, according to the Pesach of Rav Moshe, not everyone agrees with him, Rav Henkin disagreed, according to Rav Moshe, there are limited cases where we can apply this principle and render the original marriage null and void. Yes, Rav Moshe had four egregious cases. Someone's either a psychotic, that's where this comes in, or perhaps he was homosexual or impotent or was converted to another religion. Extreme cases. And I felt, myself, after hearing about borderline personality, it's severe enough to warrant the application of Rav Moshe's tshuva to nullify the marriage on the ground of Kiddush Etos. She would have known how bad this really means. She never would have married him. I wrote a question. I tried desperately to get the consent of the great rabbis in the Holy Land, including Rabbi Avadi Yosef. His grandson, who bears his name, took my question, wrote up as a whole shayla, brought it to his grandfather, who refused to sign. Repeatedly refused. Said, I just can't. No. And he's helped many women. He said, I can't do it. I don't think it rises to that level. Now, the fact that I may disagree, a man has to know his own place. Thank you for empowering me, but I know you have to know your own place. I am not going to go up when a Ravad Yosef says no. I'm not going to say yes unless I have a number of other pillars who are going to help me out. Even though I think, thought I was right. I would like to go more than an hour. I'm already 4 minutes over. I apologize. But Linetta, in 2 weeks, we will discuss the continuation of this topic. I would like your input, men and women, in terms of the order in which to go. I've already thrown out so many topics today. It's going to keep us going as long as you keep coming. I can keep talking. Because you see, there's so many different aspects to this puzzle. So I'm going to listen to you. Those will talk to me in shul or call me up. What should the priority be? Should we talk about Kiddush Etos? Which we have some correspondence which here, I think is probably on that computer right now. And then we have to talk about the prenup, and talk about the get law, and talk about the kofanashi omerotsni, from pillar to post. All these things are up for discussion, But the particular order in which we go, I will give it, leave it to a democracy. So please feel free to comment as you wish. Shavua Tov.
Thank you.
5 minutes over is not so bad, huh?
Can I ask you a question?